culture and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, Tokens and Tokats. Welcome. It is Wednesday, January 30th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's also my last day of being 44 years old. Aw, heading directly into the teeth of middle age, I believe. Not that the hairline shows it or anything, or the gray in the beard. We're all getting older, and it certainly beats the alternative. Welcome to the show. We got all sorts of great stuff for today, and of course, it's Wednesday, so you know that we got Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the show today, from the Ask Dr. Mitch column in High Times magazine to the various books that he's written on marijuana health, science, culture, and policy. If you got a question, we're taking them live right here at 420 Radio at half past the hour. You can dial in to 971-533-7111 or join us in our chat room by typing /login and creating your account on Ustream. We take our chat questions and our live caller questions at half past for Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Also, Dr. Mitch is going to give us a look at the newest study coming from Marilyn Huestis. She's the one who does a lot of the THC impairment studies. She had one that came out January 2nd. And it might even claim that the 5 nanogram limit in Washington State is too high, not too low. So we'll talk about that with Dr. Mitch. There's sure to be a lot of controversy. And speaking of controversy, at the end of the show today, got time for a little radical rant. I've been mulling this over in my mind a whole bunch. Do we go for 2014 or do we go for 2016 when it comes to marijuana legalization? I'm going to make the case for 2016 in today's Radical Rant. Why don't you check that out at the end of the show today? Also on today's show, we've got our Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tunes. We'll turn that over to Brian the Red at 20 after to get your latest dose of reggae music. And we've got our headlines coming up right after this first break. We've got an update on that trooper who conducted the roadside cavity search in Texas. We get a decision in Michigan on whether sharing medical marijuana is a crime. The Czechoslovakia in Parliament is backing medical marijuana with a catch. Washington State's looking for a marijuana consultant at a very hefty salary. And a high school in Kansas City is collecting hair from its students for random drug testing. All that, plus we go behind the headlines in New York City for a story about handcuffing a 7-year-old. And I'll show you what it has to do with marijuana, because you know me, I can find a marijuana tie in almost any story. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. Stick around. We'll be right back after these messages.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to The Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Good day, Tokers and Tokettes. Radical Russ here to encourage you to help us help Brave Michaela by visiting our benefit auction all this week on 420radio.org. Michaela Comstock is the brave little 7-year-old girl fighting leukemia who gained national attention for her use of medical marijuana to cope with the symptoms of chemotherapy. Go to 420radio.org and click on the benefit auction in the main menu. There, you'll find all sorts of memorabilia from Rolla J Studios, as well as Cumulus and Canisig vapor pens donated by Rapid Fire Marketing. You'll need a free or VIP membership to 420 Radio to participate. Click on Join Us in the main menu to sign up. Finally, if you'd like to meet the little girl who's benefiting from your generosity, enjoy the special free episode number 150 of Toker Talk Radio featuring Michaela and her family. Thanks for showing the cannabis community cares.
California is the center of marijuana consciousness. That's why High Times Magazine is returning to the Golden State for our second High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Los Angeles. That's right. Come to LA Center Studios on February 16th and 17th for this high-flying event. Meet the medical cannabis industry, visit our extra special medicating area, and sample the best cannabis products of Southern California. There'll be cultivation seminars and presentations about getting pot legalized, not just in California, but everywhere. Be there on Saturday evening when we host a Rock'em Sock'em concert with surprise musical guests. And don't forget Sunday night and the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup Awards when we honor the best sativa, best indica, best hybrid, best concentrate, and best edibles of the LA medical cannabis scene. Plus, we present the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award to marijuana superstar Tommy Chong. Come to the City of the Angels on February 16th and 17th for a High Times cannabis celebration. Go to medcancup.com for details. Live the high life. Be proud of who you are. Be part of the growing cannabis community.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Trooper to be terminated over roadside cavity search from NBC Dallas-Fort Worth. The female trooper who performed a roadside cavity search on two Irving, Texas women will be terminated, according to the Department of Public Safety. The two women from Irving are suing Trooper David Farrell, Trooper Kelly Hellison, and the director of the Department of Public Safety for what they call an unconstitutional search without probable cause. Department of Public Safety spokesman Tom Vinger says agency director Steve McCraw has made a preliminary decision to terminate. Hellison and Trooper David Farrell in December were put on paid suspension as the case awaits review by a Dallas County grand jury. In the lawsuit, Dobbs says the trooper conducted the cavity search on the roadside, illuminated by the police car's headlights, in full view of any passing motorists. The lawsuit further alleges that Hellison performed searches on both women, touching both their anus and vaginas without changing the latex gloves between searches. Their lawyers say the search was illegal and a complaint about it was filed in August, but that the DPS Texas Rangers who investigated the incident took no action. The women are requesting a trial by jury and are asking for unspecified compensatory and exemplary damages and interest, as well as recovery of attorney's fees and court costs. Sharing medical pot is not a crime, Michigan Appeals Court rules, from the Detroit Free Press. The Michigan Appeals Court says there's nothing illegal about a medical marijuana user providing a small amount of pot to another registered user at no cost. The court agreed today with a Barry County judge who had dismissed charges against a medical marijuana user who provided the drug to another at no cost. It's the first decision by the appeals court in a case involving marijuana that changed hands without money. There is no dispute that Tony Green provided less than 2.5 ounces of marijuana to Al Thornton in Nashville, Tennessee, in December 2011. Both were qualified to use medical marijuana. The Supreme Court heard arguments last fall in a case involving cash sales of marijuana. A decision is pending. The appeals court in 2011 said such sales are illegal. Czech Parliament backs medical marijuana with a catch, from the Wall Street Journal. The Czech Senate Wednesday approved a bill allowing the legal sale of cannabis for medicinal purposes, affirming a decision of the country's lower house of parliament. The proposal, which enjoys very broad support from all political parties in both houses of parliament, should become law later this year, pending an expected presidential signature. But there's a catch. The text of the bill says that only imported cannabis will be allowed for sale in the first year, quote, to ensure standards, end quote. After that, sales may expand to include registered domestic production that is strictly monitored. This is a 1-2 punch that advocates of medical marijuana say will simply make cannabis prohibitively expensive, putting the herb out of reach of most patients while enriching the black market and a few select firms that will be official traders of the goods. The legislation, which will make the Czech Republic one of the European Union's only countries to legally condone the sale of cannabis for medical purposes, has been crafted for the benefit of big business, said Alina Gaduskova, the first deputy chairwoman of the Senate. The bill fails the country's seniors, as growing a plant on one's balcony to make tea or ointments will still be technically illegal. While cannabis is technically illegal in the Czech Republic, the country's lawmakers in 2010 removed all criminal penalties for cultivation of up to 5 plants for personal use and possession of up to 15 grams of dried herb. That law doesn't explicitly mention medical use of cannabis, which makes otherwise law-abiding grandmother growers nervous. In 2011, the Czech government approved the sale of medications using cannabis derivatives. Washington looks for marijuana consultant, from Fox News Latino. If you're an expert on marijuana and are out of a job, Washington State may be looking for you. As the state begins to explore regulating their new law legalizing pot, officials are hiring an advisor on all things weed: how it's best grown, dried, tested, labeled, packaged, and cooked into brownies. High school to collect students' hair for mandatory drug testing, from CBS St. Louis. At Kansas City, a Kansas City high school began collecting hair from students to conduct mandatory drug tests starting in 2013-2014 school year. The school will collect 60 strands of hair from the student and test for several types of drugs, including marijuana and cocaine. If a student comes back with a positive drug test, that student will have 90 days to get drug-free. That's your 420 Radio News for today, Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at the New York Police Department's handcuffing of a 7-year-old boy and 10-hour subsequent interrogation. I'll also tell you what that has to do with marijuana, of course. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect, and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 14 after the hour, and we're going to go behind the headlines. This story was sent to me last night, and on its face, it's not a marijuana story at all, but I think it's got a marijuana tie-in. So let me tell you this story. It's entitled "NYPD Handcuffed 7-Year-Old and Interrogated Him for Hours Over a Missing $5," family claims. Now, this comes from Gothamist.com. A fight over $5 between Bronx school children escalated to the point where the police were called, and a 7-year-old boy was arrested, handcuffed, and kept in custody for 10 hours, according to the child's family, who is threatening to sue the city for $250 million. Okay. Now, I agree that, you know, having the kid handcuffed, you know, for 10 hours over a $5 fight, it's a little excessive, but $250 million? I don't know. All right. According to the Post reporters who spoke to Mendez and took a photograph of her with her boy, the whole mess started when there was a fight over another child's $5. The money, which was supposed to be used for a school trip that never happened, had fallen on the ground in front of the boy and two other boys when one of them scooped it up. The boy who was arrested was falsely accused of taking it, and he scuffled with the other kids, one of the other kids. Officers showed up at PSX 114 on December 4th, about 10:20 in the morning, handcuffed and held the boy in a room for about 4 hours at the school. Then they hauled him off to the 44th Precinct Station House for another 6 hours of interrogation and verbal abuse, according to the lawsuit filed against the city. According to the legal documents, another child admitted to stealing the money. But the police claim they were following procedure. NYPD spokeswoman Kim Royster told the Daily News, quote, "The attorney is fabricating the amount of time the child was in custody," end quote. She insists Wilson was only held for 4 hours and 40 minutes. Oh, what are we all getting all upset about? He was only handcuffed and held and interrogated by cops for 4 hours and 40 minutes at age seven. Why are we all so upset here? Other police sources tell the Post and Daily News that the boy allegedly punched a child. The cop source close to the incident said the seven-year-old had been bullying the victim for some time, prompting the victim's mom to call for a meeting with teachers and the suspect's mom. Quote, "This kid is no angel, even though he may look like it," end quote, the source said. Quote, "We made the arrest based on the complainant aggressively complaining about what the defendant did to him. This wasn't something where one kid runs off with another kid's basketball. This seven-year-old attacked someone and took his money. There's a little more to this story than it appears," end quote. "Everything was done properly," the unidentified cop continued, adding that the boy was given pizza during his detention. Oh, he had pizza. Well, then, it was just like going to Chuck E. Cheese, I suppose. "He was arrested for a robbery. He was taken to the precinct and put in the juvenile room. His parent was allowed to see him," end quote. Another source argues that, quote, "If we didn't handcuff him and he ran out the front door, then we would have had an escaped prisoner on our hands," end quote. Now, the Gothamist concludes by saying, "We're all sleeping better at night for that." The NYPD has a history of handcuffing unassuming criminal types like the 7-year-old special ed student, the 12-year-old who doodled on her desk, and the 15-year-old who used her student MetroCard. And they got links at Gothamist to all of that. You can always find my links, too, at news.radicalrust.com. But where I wanted to go with this story is, first of all, if we didn't handcuff him and he ran out the front door. So what you're telling me is that you are in a police station with a kid who's 7 years old and you don't have enough people around to be able to supervise and be with that kid at all times when he's in a police station handcuffed to the wall? That you have to handcuff him to the wall because you have to leave him alone because you have so much other work to do, right? Do you see where I'm going with this? NYPD, stop and frisks, 50,000 marijuana arrests every year. Maybe, just maybe, if those cops weren't out there in Harlem harassing a bunch of black kids over the weed, the decriminalized weed that they've got in their pocket, there'd be a few more officers to hang around the 44th precinct and maybe, you know, supervise a 7-year-old that they brought in over a $5 schoolyard fight. This is the mentality that frightens the hell out of me as I think about the future of America, and it's one of the few times where I thank my lucky stars I don't have children of my own and have to worry about the future they're going to live in. Is this the world we want to live in where we're handcuffing 7-year-olds? Oh, well, the kid wasn't an angel. Oh, yeah. I don't care if he was Dennis the Menace. I don't care if he's the most incorrigible 7-year-old in the world. If he's not an angel, that kind of argues a little more that he needs supervision, doesn't it? Oh, this lock 'em up mentality, this bust everybody, you know, it's getting to my nerves. I'm telling you, I really, really worry about the future of this country. And to me, this is not, I mean, it's shocking, but not surprising. It's shocking, but not surprising when we live in a world where increasingly it's us versus them. It's cops versus people. And especially when we're talking about places like New York City, and we're talking about neighborhoods like where this PSX 114 is located, we're talking about a mentality, a siege mentality that the people live under, where they don't think of 911 as someone that's going to help them. They think of cops as someone that's going to come and hurt them, especially the people that are the marijuana smokers who are afraid or never do call the cops because doing so could get them busted instead of their perpetrator. But hey, we got better things to do than to have to worry about that all day. We got a guest in studio today. Welcome to Bacon Dan.
Thank you very much.
Yay! Thank you, Bacon Crispy, for the
excellent chat. So we're going to enjoy your a little 20 after break here with us. All right. Take a break. We'll be right back.
That funny reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Great. Drugs make me strong. Drugs make me smart. Drugs make me feel good. Drugs make me cool.
You believe that crap? Huh? You believe all that stuff they're handing you about drugs? You want to believe in something? How about yourself? Don't do drugs.
The Russ Belville Show brings you the best in daily toker tunes every weekday. Each day features a different genre, including Roots Monday.
Folks, here's a story about Mindy the Moocher.
Electric Tuesday. Irie Wednesday.
Some ganja planter, call me the ganja planter.
Groovin' Thursday.
Don't you wanna get high?
And Rockin' Friday.
Something like this.
Then on weekends, we mix them all together in our weekend music party. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our daily toker tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your daily toker tune.
You know what it is? It's Wednesday, and that means it's time to get Irie. And we have to turn it over to our Deputy Assistant Director of Irie-ness, Brian the Red, over there on mic two. How you doing, Brian?
Irie, it's Wednesday. So that means tonight we've got a brand new Red Eyes Reggae Flashback at 8 p.m. Pacific. Hope you all come and tune in and join me. I call it the flashback because each week, the following week, we're going to listen to the title track from the show that I played the previous week. So, last week's show was entitled Every Little Thing. It was a track by Earth Force. I do this so that the people who don't listen to my show regularly can get just a little taste of, you know, what I bring to the table. But this is pretty good stuff, man. Just dig it. Every Little Thing. That's what matters.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Dan Michaels. If you're looking for professional voice talent for your commercial or podcast, I'm your man. Visit danmichaelsaudio.com for more information.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there. And we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
And now, another episode of Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre. I'm your host, Leonard Pinfgarnell III. Tonight we take a look at one of the finest works in the cannabis cinema, 1996's Half-Baked, starring David Chappelle, as interpreted by the Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theatre Company. In this scene, Chappelle's character, Thurgood Marshall, has just admitted his addiction to cannabis to a room full of narcotics addicts. One addict, played in the film by Robert Saget, and interpreted here by the Royal Company's Sir Frederick Farrakh, takes umbrage at the suggestion.
I find preposterous the notion that you, sir, may be addicted to cannabis. In times previous, I have undertaken lubricious endeavors, most revolting and unbecoming of a proper gentleman, in my servitude to the wicked powder of the coca leaf. Lo, that is an addiction whose chains would bind Hercules. At any point in history, could one identify a moment in your life so sullied by your ignominy as a cannabis slave? Methinks not. Boo this man!
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre, I'm Leonard Pinfgarnell III.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times Magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, we've reached the middle of another week, and it's time to speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Hello, Dr. Mitch.
Hey, hello.
So glad to have you here. And folks, if you want to get your questions in, just log in on our chat room, type /login. And it helps if you put a Q colon at the beginning of your question, capital Q colon. That gives me a little icon, makes it easier for me to pick them out of chat. Or you can just dial us at the number right there, 971-533-7111. Before we take some calls or some chat questions, we always give Dr. Mitch the first word. Let us know what the latest science or studies are telling us about cannabis in America. So, Dr. Mitch, what's new?
Well, as you emailed me earlier today, the lab that Hustis runs has an interesting study on psychomotor function in chronic daily users. Unfortunately, it's being generalized rather inappropriately to the literature on driving. If you look really closely at some pretty complicated tasks that people do with a joystick, you will find that folks who are high every single day, especially those who started getting high very early in life, do a little more poorly than folks who don't get high much. But trying to take this literature into the, gee, people shouldn't drive if they ever smoke marijuana, is quite the leap.
There was one of the reports on this I got was from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. And, of course, in the state of Washington, with the legalization under I-502, they passed a 5 nanogram per se DUID limit. Is it Hustis? Is that a pronunciation?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So Hustis is quoted in here saying in her testing that almost no one tested at 5 nanograms after a few hours. She uses a 24-hour window to round it all off and then, quote, a good proportion of even chronic daily users will be negative within the 24 hours, and the remaining 15 were all negative within 3 days, except 7 people. So, you know, there's a lot of fears up here in the Pacific Northwest about, you know, people like me who are chronic daily users. Does this study tell us anything new that we should have known before 502?
I'm actually not in agreement with her on that statement at all. The individual differences in cannabis metabolism are so vast, and to take a sample of even 40 people and say this is how cannabis metabolism is for all humans is a real affront to science. So I am not a fan of the 5 nanogram business, and I feel like a roadside sobriety test is a whole lot better, particularly for folks who are chronic daily users who undoubtedly are going to have tolerance to psychomotor effects that people who are naive to the plant just simply wouldn't have.
Yeah, it bothered me a little as well. But now that we've got legal marijuana in Washington or Colorado, they could probably undertake some larger studies. And how many people would we need to study to get a real accurate idea?
I mean, I feel like if you do a power analysis and think about what the size of this effect ought to be, somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 people would certainly be impressive. And if I just had a feel for metabolism in a sample of 80 people who, you know, used a regular amount in a single evening and then were abstinent for 24 hours, we could project pretty reasonably with a sample that size. But, you know, we're looking at a study here where that has, I think, 19 in one group and 20 in the other or something like that, and it's just a little much to try to generalize from that to a bigger queue. But I still also feel like that the issue isn't really, you know, THC metabolites. It's actual impairment, and that's a completely different measure entirely. I'd much rather see folks work on these roadside sobriety tests and see how well they actually predict performance in the car rather than getting concerned about a certain number of nanograms.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, trying to have a blanket statement of body chemistry on cannabinoids doesn't make a lot of sense when we have an endocannabinoid system. In my mind, I can understand why it works for alcohol, because we've seen, you know, dose dependent reactions and impairment in people pretty broadly, even though isn't it true that there are some alcoholics who might drive better while at a certain blood level?
I mean, the delirium tremens often kick in below 0.02 for a lot of experienced alcoholics, and they would actually drive better after 2 beers than they would after none, just because they wouldn't have the shakes. But obviously, that doesn't generalize to cannabis.
Yeah, yeah, and let's again focus on the impairment, the actual impairment that we can prove, not that somebody might have used cannabis within a certain amount of time. There was another statement from this Hustis study that was brought out in Post-Intelligencer, tackling the addictive nature of cannabis, and she says, quote, "This is the first time that we've shown that there's really a brain change with chronic cannabis use." And this had to do with downregulation of the CB, was it CB2 receptor, CB1? I got to find that. But anyway, of the CB1 receptor, and then finding that, you know, upregulated after abstinence. Can you kind of explain to, you know, lay audience what that really means, and do you agree with that finding?
So, in fact, that has been shown in the animal literature before this, and we do see essentially a CB1 receptor is really, if you will, kind of a protein chain at the very end of a nerve, and that will essentially become part of the nerve cell and kind of disappear, if you will, if you're exposed to cannabis chronically. And we've seen it in animals, and now we've seen it in humans. What does that mean for real life? Is this a giant brain change? No, not really. It means you're going to be a little more tolerant to cannabis, and that's about it. The funny thing is that as soon as you say brain change, people think brain structure, as if there's this giant hole in your head now or something like that, and that is really not the case at all. We're talking about very subtle effects at the receptor level, and it's the density of these CB1 receptors in the brain, not some outrageous structural change.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the big change from daily chronic cannabis use is not a brain change, it's a wallet change.
sad but true.
You develop a tolerance, you're buying more. It's just, yeah, slow down, folks. You can take a break every now and then, and you'll find that you get a better buzz after your bowl, and you don't use so much, man. So that's something we've talked about before. Let's go to our chat room. We got some questions coming in, and Dreamweaver asked a question. I'm going to modify it a little bit because make it a little more challenging here. She wants to know, are there any studies that reveal the relative harms between alcohol and cannabis? And I suppose that means that says, you know, alcohol is bad compared to marijuana. I want to amend that a bit by asking, how about studies on the interaction of cannabis and alcohol as well?
Sure. So the side-by-side comparisons have really only been done in that driving literature, and alcohol at, say, 0.05 is markedly worse for driving impairment than THC at some pretty standard dose levels. The interaction, however, is extremely bad. So THC and alcohol together on driving is pretty rough. The long-term chronic effects, though, usually you don't see them in an individual study. You only see them across studies, and alcohol, of course, is markedly worse for brain structural changes. Chronic alcoholics and even binge drinkers, folks drinking maybe six alcoholic drinks a night, start to show neuropsych deficits relatively early in that experience. Sarah Jo Nixon has some data that after just 2 years of that, you can start to detect some deficits on certain tasks. With cannabis, you really got to go gung-ho to try to find, you know, these oddball brainwave changes after 2 years of daily use, and they only show up in certain studies. So that's clearly the case. We do find that alcohol lowers the rate of metabolism of THC, and I'm not recommending the home game on this, but essentially the duration of the THC effect is going to increase with a little alcohol in your system. Again, it's, you know, just not the best habit on earth, and by all means, if you have cannabis, what else do you need?
There we go. We're talking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and you can call in at 971-533-7111. Even if you're not listening live, you can call in and leave a voicemail message. We can take those as well and get them to Dr. Mitch at a later time. Or if you're listening on a replay, visit 420radio.org. Take a look in our forums. We've got a Dr. Mitch questions forum in there. Just search for it, and you can post your question there. We'll bring it up on a future show. There's also an email option. You can email 420radio. I'm sorry, you can email 420research. Force a habit. 420research at gmail.com. 420research at gmail.com if you'd like to email the doctor directly. I wanted to bring up something was noted in Reuters and got posted on the Learn About Sam site, and I thought this was an interesting little thing to talk about. And it quotes an author of a study, a Dutch study apparently. And the headline here is "Link Between Pot and Psychosis Goes Both Way in Kids." And the author says, "We have focused mainly on temporal order. Is it a chicken or an egg sort of thing. And the point they're trying to make in this post is that we found that kids that have psychosis tend to use marijuana, and we found that kids that use marijuana tend to have psychosis. So it works both ways. And I'm wondering if you have any clever ways of shooting that down.
Well, in truth, Thornycraft had some data back in the early 90s suggesting that, hey, if you really do have a psychotic disorder and you smoke a lot of pot, even in an effort to self-medicate, it's just not a good habit. You're much more likely to have another psychotic break later on. But it really does beg the question about any potential causality as far as cannabis is concerned in the creation of any of the psychotic disorders, and schizophrenia in particular. So they always claim, oh, we measured psychosis in these kids before we did this, and then we gathered the data, and then sure enough, the chronic marijuana users are the ones who ended up with elevated rates of schizophrenia, and it's usually, oh, they had 7 in their group, and there was 1 in the other group. I mean, talking really small samples just because schizophrenia is so rare. And then, in fact, you have to wonder, first of all, how do you assess psychosis in a little kid? It's not very easy to do. My former student, Jason Shipman, has been trying to work on that for, you know, at least a decade. And are these measures really any good? So odds are high these folks were already having some odd magical ideation, some weird schizotypy-type experiences, turned to cannabis in hopes of kind of dampening those symptoms. Some strains may have worked, some strains might not have, and then suddenly they get a schizophrenic break and it gets blamed on the marijuana.
Right. All right. One last question as we wind up the segment this time. And again, folks, you can get a question into 420research@gmail.com if you didn't get a chance to get in this one. But we've been doing, of course, an auction for Brave Michaela, the little 7-year-old medical marijuana patient here in Oregon who's fighting leukemia. And people can visit that at 420radio.org. There's a benefit auction link. And of course, we're also in contact with Jeremy Eccles, whose son has the autistic rage, who's also on the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. And we've documented a number of kids using medical marijuana. And I found that when I see the reporting on this, the word controversy keeps popping up. Controversy, controversy, controversy. I'm just wondering, Dr. Mitch, at least among medical professionals, people that are treating kids, pediatricians, is it still controversial, or can they not see the benefits these kids are getting from cannabis?
You can always bet that MDs are going to be a little reluctant about a controlled substance when it comes to individual case studies. So we don't have a large randomized controlled trial saying, hey, cannabis is really working for large groups of people all with the exact same diagnosis. But anybody who could deny that these two kids are benefiting would just have to be an idiot. And so if there's going to be a controversy, it's going to have to be this very distant cry for randomized clinical trials. And by all means, I hope Colorado and Washington can spearhead some of those.
Yeah, we hope so, too. And all those kids are in our thoughts, and their parents, too, because it's tough when everybody says what you're doing is controversial, and then you look at your kid and go, well, it's working. Dr. Mitch joins us every Wednesday here on the Russ Belleville Show on 420radio.org. And we appreciate your donation of time to our efforts. Thank you so much, Dr. Mitch.
Always a pleasure. Bye.
All right. We'll be right back with Radical Rant and the case for legalization in 2016.
You cut people, you smoke trees till you get what you need now. Designer drugs with minted smoke to get through the day. You always get them so high.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belleville Show.
Fucking hell.
You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
Five of the last 7 major party candidates to run for president, 3 of the last 7 vice presidential candidates, and the last 3 presidents have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House. This is the Russ Belleville Show.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks, this one's a little difficult, I got to tell you, because I've been going round and round in my mind as to what Oregon and some of the other states like California should do with respect to legalizing marijuana. We got marijuana legalized in Washington and Colorado and damn near got it legalized in Oregon. So there's a lot, there's a very large part of my instinct that says strike while the iron is hot. That we need to move forward with 2014. We need to legalize marijuana. We need to hit right now. And so before I get to the rant, before I get to case for 2016, let me just make the case for 2014. Because here's a situation where I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. It just may not be the best idea. Here's the point. In 1996, California passed the Compassionate Use Act, Prop 215, and ushered in the era of medical marijuana. After it was ushered in 96, 97, medical marijuana started taking effect. People started getting their recommendations and the public started seeing some what they perceived to be problems. Loophole, if you will, that you could drive a Mack truck through. And that was the line that said for any other condition for which marijuana provides relief, which led to, of course, almost anybody who wants to get a card in California can. Led to a lot of media reports about that and so forth. Fast forward a couple years, you get to 1998, and again, striking while the iron is hot, in an off-year election, mind you, 1998, passed Oregon's medical marijuana law, Washington's medical marijuana law, Alaska's medical marijuana law. So you had three states following up in 1998, and you know, strike while the iron is hot. And that would seem to argue for doing the same thing in 2014, right? To follow up on the victories in Colorado and Washington with victories in Oregon and maybe a couple other states 2 years later. And again, like I said, 2014, not necessarily a bad argument that I'm making here. In fact, I've made the argument in the past. But if we move forward for 2014, there's a few things that are slightly different in the scenario than when we were dealing with medical marijuana in 1996. Understand that by 1996, any movement forward on marijuana policy did not exist. Okay. We went from the last state decriminalizing in 1979, I believe it was, Nebraska, all the way to 96 before marijuana policy was even talked about in America. Except for, of course, the other side, you know, just say no. Just say no and, you know, lock people up. So we went a long time without any marijuana discussion. It wasn't in the political air as far as the general public. When 96 happened, when medical marijuana happened, it forced the country to have to address that issue. But we had, I'd like to say, the element of surprise, in a sense. We had the element of surprise in that a lot of the general public didn't know about marijuana. We could sell the medical marijuana angle, help protect the sick, you know, take the sick and dying off the battlefield. Don't you have any compassion? And so forth. And we did. And we made those steps. I think it's a different time now. I think it's a different time now in that the public is no longer surprised by the marijuana issue. We don't have that element of surprise. And we have an entire history of medical marijuana behind us that our detractors can point to. Amanda Ryman said it at the California conference. I saw the report on this where she said, you know, they're going to say, what, you want to legalize marijuana? We've had medical for how long? We still haven't figured that out. Now, of course, most of the problems with medical marijuana is because we don't have legal marijuana, but nevertheless, that's what they'll say. So there's a great urge to jump forward with 2014 and go for something there. I reported from the Marijuana Policy Project town hall meeting where this was discussed in Oregon and where Marijuana Policy Project lays out the case for 2016. Now, the case for 2016, I've got some of the points up on the screen. First of all, in 2016, it is a general, it's a presidential election. And always there's better turnout in presidential elections and better support for our issues in those elections. Now, Again, you could look at medical. 98 we passed in Oregon, Washington, Alaska. 99, Maine took it up. 2006, Rhode Island took it up. But again, some of those are legislative, right? They weren't initiatives. But there's no denying the electoral math that we get a better turnout of younger voters and voters that are more in tune with our message during a presidential election year. So it's often been said that 2016 is a slam dunk. Well, I also think 2014 isn't necessarily a half-court shot. I think 2014 might be a mid-range jumper. But the question is, if you're down by two, or you're down by one, and you need to win the game, do you take the mid-range jumper, or do you drive for the slam dunk? And I think we need to drive for the slam dunk. I'm really starting to see a national push here, and we could dribble a few states at a time, this election, that election, or this election. But I think a coordinated push in 2016 could be the Berlin Wall moment that topples the whole charade of prohibition. The Marijuana Policy Project right now, as far as I've seen their plans, is pushing for California, Oregon, Maine, Vermont. I think there was another one in that mix that they were looking at as far as initiatives. If four or five or six states have initiatives on their ballot in one presidential election year, when it's an open presidential election year, because, Obama's termed out, it'll be a new Democrat, perhaps Hillary Clinton, and a new Republican, perhaps a Marco Rubio, perhaps a Chris Christie, someone like that. Wow. Talk about the electoral fireworks over the marijuana issue, because both of those candidates would so desperately need the electoral votes of Oregon, of California, maybe Massachusetts is one of those states we throw in the mix. But boy, California being a big electoral prize, 55, the biggest prize you can get in electoral politics, and having legalization on its ballot, that could be a big game changer, folks. And then you also have to look at the fact that if we go for 2014, we have to start now. We have to have money right now. We have to start making ad buys by the middle of the year. By summer, we need to start making ad buys for the 2014 year so that they'll be cheap enough and you can get enough of these ad buys. So we need to have the money now ready to go. We need to have everyone on board in a coordinated push. And you have to have a public information campaign. And also consider that as we move forward in trying to get legalization, do we want to get the legalization that can win in 2014 or the legalization we want in 2016? I think the comparison between Colorado and Washington's legalization efforts is instrumental here. With Colorado's legalization effort, they had like 8 years of pushing the safer, pushing the message of marijuana safer than alcohol, of pushing the local Denver legalization race, the 2006 statewide race. They had a lot of buildup and a lot of public education. And they also had a medical marijuana system that was highly regulated. So when it came time to ask voters to accept marijuana legalization, that was kind of like what they had for medical, 55% of the voters were able to buy that. But in Washington state, there was no similar public education campaign, at least of the type that's going to reach the mainstream voters. Of course, there's always been HempFest and so forth. But there hadn't been something that's going to reach mainstream people. And there'd been a medical marijuana industry that had appeared without any sort of serious regulation, and a lot of people starting to see a wink, wink, nudge, nudge going on with, I'm a caregiver for one patient at a time as they line up outside of my building. So that presented a different atmosphere. And in that atmosphere, the people in Washington who were leading these campaigns and trying to bring the big money and the big names onto it had to make compromises that a lot of us in the cannabis community aren't too happy with, like per se DUIDs, like no home grow. So, and maybe a prohibitive taxing scheme. Why did those decisions get made? Because they had to, in order to garner the support and the money in that state and to deal with that political atmosphere. So maybe that's the lesson of jumping real quick, of starting in 2010 after Prop 19, like New Approach Washington did, and jumping into going to 2012 with only 2 years to educate the public. You have to make compromises that maybe aren't worth making. So would that be the same situation in Oregon? If we were to push for 2014 and knowing we'd have a lower voter turnout and perhaps having to deal with fallout from what's going on in legalization in Washington state, would we be fighting not only to overcome the deficit in voters that there would be from a midterm election, but also overcoming a lot of negative perceptions about our current medical marijuana system in Oregon, and a lot of negative perceptions about our last attempt to legalize in Oregon, would we have to fight against all of that to be able to make it work in 2014? Or could we take a longer tack approach, take 4 years, maybe in the next 2 years, focus on the medical side and cleaning it up and getting it organized and regulated so Oregon voters have some model to look at when they get to 2016 and are ready to start looking at legalization? Plus, if we stand out all alone, Oregon by itself and going for 2014, because the reports I'm getting for California seems like California has decided to pretty much go 2016. If we stand out all alone in 2014, then we're just one local little market here fighting for marijuana legalization. If we're part of a coalition of California, Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine, Oregon, then our fight also is a national fight. See, Washington and Colorado got to be a national fight because they were the first. If we're the third, we're just another state legalizing. But if we're one of six, that's, again, big, huge national story. So it's very tough for me to make this kind of argument, though. Again, one of the disturbing things about being in politics sometimes and not being on right-wing radio is I can't do black and white thinking, right? There's just not good guys and bad guys. There's lots of nuances. There's lots of shades of gray going on here. One of the nuances is waiting till 2016 means 193 Oregonians per month will get a felony possession charge. And we're going to let that go on for two years longer than we should? Should we not try to fight every election to get something on the ballot? Those are legitimate questions, and we'll talk about them throughout the next few years, I'm sure. But again, if you're going to go in 2014, you better be passing the ball to your top shooter, okay, if we're going to stick with that slam dunk mid-range jumper metaphor. We can't let the scrubs off the bench be trying to hoist up a desperation shot. We need a sharpshooter out there. If you're going to go for 2014, it's got to be coordinated. It's got to be everybody on the same page. It's got to be professionals running the campaign. It's got to have a lot of money poured into it starting right now. Because a failure in 2014, a failure, if we tried to pass legalization and got 47% in 2012, and then in 2014 get another 47%, maybe bump it up, you know, again, midterm election. Even if we match what we did and got 47%, the political theme in Oregon gets to be, once again, we rejected the stoners. Once again, they put up some silly stuff and the voters came to their senses. And, you know, since 98, we haven't been fooled again. Because not only is there the rejection of all the legalization attempts we have, there's the rejection of the two dispensary attempts that we've had as well. Oregon's activists don't have a success to point to since 98, except SB 1085, raising the limit of the plants and stuff in the legislature. But since then, Oregon activists have seen the legislature raise the fee on the medical marijuana program, doubling it. We've seen, a failure to put together any sort of regulated supply system that the voters will pass. Let's wait till 2016. Let's work together with the big national funders, the big national organizations. Let's work together with all the other states that will push us at the same time. Let's have all of our talking points put together so no matter who they interview in what state, we are all on the same page. And let's finally break down this wall in 2016. I'm interested to hear what you think about this. Our phone lines are open at 971-533-7111 on Toker Talk Radio, where you're the voice of the marijuana nation. That's all the time we got for hour one here. For Bacon Dan PDX and Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. And don't forget, we're still doing our Brave Michaela auction, 420radio.org. Look for benefit auction. Michaela herself put up some artwork of her own and autographed it for you. And Brave Mama put up one of her leukemia awareness necklaces that she makes, handmade. Check those out. Auction ends this Friday. Hey, thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take a seat,
you're growing, you're dying, you're